September 9th, 2023 at 8 o'clock p.m. I'm Gus, and I'm your host for Nightfall 3, Constitutions and Cosmos, Nada Dao, Nada, and, well, let me just get the whole title up so I can read it. Constitutions and Cosmos, Nada Dao, Adam, Nada, and we're here to talk about, talk with some of the people from Nada Dao and a constitution and how it's going to affect DAOs and the greater cosmos ecosystem. So without further ado, or however you say it, I will hand the hey Poro and Massive, what's up? Our Massive V. So you're at Nada Dao. So both of you are at Nada Dao, and hopefully we get Nada Dao or Nada himself in. So I'll hand the microphones over and say good evening to you. 1 second, please. And if anyone wants to be a co-host, please feel free to do so. We've got a request coming in. There you go, Poro. It's been a long time since we last talked. And let's see here. I sent out a invite to both of you. And I still have a request pending. There we go. We've got Envy in as well. And hold on, Poro is connecting. That's good. We got Nada Dao in here as well. So I'll invite him to co-host. And Poro, did you say that you wish to be co-host as well? Or I don't know how things work in Nada, so you guys can decide for yourselves. If you guys can speak, please go ahead. Hopefully
there we go. Everyone. Sorry about that.
Yeah, good to see you, man. I didn't see you last night. It was a late one last night. So feeling it today. How are you feeling today? How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I've been, I just slept like for 12 or 14 hours or something. So yeah, I was also feeling it, but I didn't have the energy to do the space, but glad it went well.
Yeah, it went on until, I don't know, 9 o'clock in the morning. So then I had to go play in a tennis tournament against an 18-year-old, two sets. That was painful. So so I'm just kind of resting now. So I'm glad to be compost mentos in this space and to be enjoying it with you guys. So do you want to wait for more people to come in? And by the way, I hate you for being able to sleep 12 hours, 14 hours. Lucky you. I only get about three and a half hours a night if I'm lucky. But enough of me. Let's talk a little bit about Nada. Do you want to wait for Nada Dao? Do you want to wait for more people to come in, or we have quite a few retweets?
Yeah, give me just a minute. Actually, I'm going to pull up my documents and then I'll be ready to go.
Okie dokie. Poro, how are you doing? It's a long time.
Oh yeah, I'm still waking up after that space. I had a good rest.
Yeah, that was a long one, man. That's a marathon. Thanks for sticking it out, even through Jacob was there as well. That got interesting. I think Tank took it over, and that was it. But a lot of good things happened last night. A lot of weird things happened last night. And how's Massive, did you want to speak? And Envy, would you like to speak as well? I invite all of you guys to speak. Wait for Nada to bring up his notes. And if you guys want me to retweet this, or please retweet it again, if you want me to mass mail or mass DM people, I usually do that before while the Earth sleeps, just before. I'll let you guys decide. This is your project. By the way, I can also edit this later, so we can have a starting time as soon as you have your documents ready. We can start off there if you want as well. Can everyone hear me okay? I've got 3 fans running in my room. Still hot here in Florida, where I'm currently staying. And so, yeah, I'm in my bedroom and it is west facing. So you get the evening sun that comes in and it just totally heats it up like a greenhouse. All right. Cool. All right. Anyone want to speak, go right ahead. And then I'll tell you what, Nada, if you want to introduce the space, what we'll do is I'll edit it for the start from the moment you start later on. And Terra Spaces should be in here. Where are they? Did you want Terra Spaces in here to have this memorialized on the internet forever?
Oh, it's up to them. But I am ready to go ahead whenever you guys are.
Okay. That's interesting. Where are they? Where is Finn, right? Where is Finn?
I think that's right, yeah.
All right, I'll just message them real quick. I'm like, where are you? Do you want to just go ahead and start, or do you want to wait for them?
I can just go ahead and start. Because okay. I don't know if they're able to make it or not. But so NataDAO is it's a nonprofit public institution. We established this in proposals 1 and 2. We asked the community to review sort of incorporation options for the DAO. And I think that, so I'll just go back through sort of prehistory before getting to the constitution here. But one of the concerns that I had whenever I started working in NataDAO or joining NataDAO, participating in our meetings, was that NataDAO doesn't have like a standing reserve or a standing treasury of the NATO token, because the NataDAO members didn't create it. It isn't our contract. In fact, the NATO token is ownerless as far as its contract goes. It was fully distributed at launch. There's no way of editing that or doing anything to it because of that fact. And so I saw that there were a bunch of people who were gathering around this token through the DAO, and they were trying to organize to like collectivize and do things together. And as the wet blanket of the group that I am, I was like, oh wow, if you do something, you're going to generate these like tax obligations. And that was sort of my primary concern, really, was like taxes, because I feel that everybody focuses on securities regulations and all of this, but taxes are going to be another huge like cudgel that governments can sort of wield against blockchain projects. So I started looking at options for legal incorporation of the DAO, and there exist some options. Some of them I think are more superficial than others. For example, in the United States, there are DAO LLCs in Vermont, in Wyoming, I believe in Nevada, and maybe even in Delaware. But the problem with all of these DAO LLC and US-based incorporations is that the federal codes governing sort of international businesses, taxation, et cetera, are still not really adapted. So even where these states have come forward and kind of tried to embrace Web3, the federal government and federal legislation is still way behind on all of that. And so these state statutes for DAO LLCs, they allow you to incorporate as a DAO, yes, but the US government still requires quite a lot of centralization of DAO projects in order to be legible to the US government. And they also require quite a lot of monitoring of international participants in the DAO. Like every international participant, you have to file tax reports on for any transactions they may be involved in. And it creates a really quite an onerous and frankly kind of unnecessary amount of overhead for the thing that you're trying to do. And I think this is one thing where tax laws, like, to me, a tax law is a way of describing activity, coordinated activity to the government. And so if the governments don't allow you to describe your activity honestly or authentically, then there are problems with doing so. You're making compromises and trade-offs, and you're having to do things that you might not otherwise intend to be doing. and so the U.S. options have this drawback to them. There's a heavy centralization cost to incorporating a DAO in the U.S. Other options, which have been used by blockchain projects, more commonly include foundations from Switzerland, which is what the Interchain Foundation is, the ICF over Cosmos Hub. There are also foundations in the Virgin Islands, Panama, etc. And these also tend to have a heavy degree of centralization. So for the Switzerland foundations, you have to have, I think it's 9 to 15 board members. And they impose, so I don't know exactly how enforced it is, but for a foundation, you have to define the foundation's purpose in its charter draft. And this charter has to define all of the activities that happen through the foundation, or else its status can be revoked. Like I say, I don't know how enforced that is or to what degree it's enforced, but MetaDAO, because it's a group of volunteers, it's not necessarily a group of people who are developers who are working on Project XYZ or whatever, that didn't feel quite right because they're MetaDAO is a more sort of protean or polymorphous, pluripotent type of thing. It can grow as its membership grows or as its membership composition changes interest. And we wanted to maintain that flexibility. The other major drawback to these foundations is they're often quite costly. So as I mentioned, we didn't have a ton of funds. And like a Swiss foundation in itself runs 50 to 100K, plus you're going to have to pay whatever attorney fees, and all of that that goes with it. And we were lucky, I think, to have found the Marshall Islands DAO LLC options, which the Marshall Islands is trying to position itself as a hub, I think, for Web3 advances. And they've really gone through their corporate code and their internal laws to make DAOs intelligible and compliant with what they have. So whereas in the U.S. we have states that have done it, but the federal government hasn't. In the Marshall Islands, like, the full government is sort of behind this Web3 push. The Marshall Islands, I believe, also has at least planned. I don't think it's launched yet, but they're interested in launching their own sort of sovereign currency. And I think that the the ticker for that is SOV, S-O-V. But so the thing that I think made the Marshall Islands a good place for this is the fact that it's where a lot of international shipping companies headquarter. I think it's the largest locality for jurisdiction for this incorporation of international shipping companies, like 20 or 25% of all of them in the world headquarter in the Marshall Islands. And shipping companies have a lot in common with DAOs in the sense that their members tend to be international. They tend to have operations that are international in scope. And they basically took these sort of shipping laws that they've built their past 50 to 100 years on and expanded it to the Web3 space. And I think that that's just really intelligent. it allows for DAOs to sort of take advantage of this flexibility and openness to new members and to new kinds of ventures, while also providing them limited liability protections, which I think, as we're seeing with the CFTC, SEC enforcement actions, like, those protections are very important. And if you don't have them, it basically just gives these agencies a sort of unlimited unlimited right to demand things from you because you're all personally exposed. And so there's not much negotiation that you can do at that point once you've been caught in those circumstances. And so this is incorporating in the first place. We chose to do so because it forces the world to kind of recognize, like, we're here, and if you want to mess with us, you have to come here and play by these rules. It's not just to drag us into court and, like, beat us around. So it was about sort of having forethought and being forward-looking. And since we don't have a token, we have no staking yield, nothing like that. There's no treasury per se. We chose a nonprofit structure to do that. And so we were fortunate, I think, to have two community members, Rendrask and Waterslide, who both launched NFT projects and agreed to partition part of their profits to NADADAO. And this became sort of the nest egg or the seed funding that NADADAO has. It's not a lot. I think at the highest, it was maybe $35,000 or $40,000. Compared to some other projects, that's not much at all. And it's what we've been running on. It's how we paid the incorporation fee to become an LLC. It's what we are still kind of working on. But now that we have this incorporation behind us and we've developed this internal structure in the Constitution, which we can talk about, I think we'll start looking at ways to be effective within Web3, within Cosmos, and also to find ways to sort of generate revenue for the DAO. But the good thing, or to my mind, the good thing about NADADAO is that it doesn't need a ton of revenue because our interest in what we're doing are fairly narrow. So to go over our interest, I guess I would say that since the NADA token was fully airdropped at the beginning, it was given out to Juno stakers who had participated in governance, early governance for Juno. It managed to tap into a collection of people who really care about Juno and who really care about Cosmos. And maybe some people would contest that, but I have seen nothing to contradict it. All of the people who I've met in NADADAO like very deeply care about Cosmos, not just as a number go up token, but as something which means something to the world. It's not just a hack of the existing financial system. It constitutes a genuine alternative to it. And I think that it's a powerful thing that the NADA token has gathered up in that human capital. Which again, it may not be the most technical interest. We're not all developers or engineers, but we are thinking about the sort of social, cultural, and economic aspects of chain governance. So one of the chief things that we do is we run validators. We validate the Juno network, the Akash network, and Jackal. And these three networks, we think, really sort of push the limits of what Web3 can mean and be beyond financialization. And so by validating on those, we offer our members, those people who hold this NADA token, to organize their voice in a collective fashion. So the DAO itself, you could say it instrumentalizes the original NADA airdrop. If the NADA airdrop identified people who were early adopters who participated in governance, the NADA DAO allows those same people and people who share those values to come together and to think about chain governance and chain stewardship thoughtfully, deliberatively, and collectively, and to make an impact on it. So we have this LLC incorporation, and we've now put up the constitution. So the LLC faces outward to the world. It tells the world we are this. The constitution that we're now ratifying, it turns inward and it says, this is how we're going to do it. And I think that the point of the constitution in that regard is just that it allows us to operate transparently as a public institution. Like it would be very easy to have a DAO and just have one person make all the decisions and everybody follows along with that. But we want to live up to like this promise of decentralization. And to us, I think that means a certain degree of scalability, the ability for operations to grow and to expand as a community grows and expands, or to shrink and contract if that's what's happening. because if you think about Bitcoin, it started on one guy's computer. It wasn't very decentralized then. But what counts about decentralization is this openness to scaling and the ability to bring new people in while minimizing the degree of social trust. So the Constitution is intended, or we hope that it will be in place to minimize the kind of social trust that is sometimes needed when looking to particular sub-DAO formations. I know that like the Atom Accelerator DAO sometimes has this cloud over it because it doesn't feel very participatory or open to community influence in a way. And so this is, these instances of these types of governance structures being put forward are what we wanted to respond to and wanted to sort of think through, go through the decision space for each of these things and to create an organization that still feels organic and allows for people to sort of pitch in when and where they want to without being overly controlled by a single authority. So sorry, I've gone on for a while. So that's that was my lead up, my prehistory to the Constitution, how we got here to the Constitution, and why we think it's a good step. And just to add one final dimension to why I think it's a good step, I hope in some ways that the NATO-DAO Constitution can serve as an inspiration to other chains and DAOs in Cosmos to be more thoughtful about their political organization and to think about the institutions that they're creating with an eye towards precisely the values of decentralization, openness, and participation. So,
yeah, that was one of the major things that was coming through when you were talking about choosing the Marshall Islands, doing the LLC there in lieu of doing, say, a foundation somewhere else or an LLC and a crypto-friendly state through a DAO LLC. And then also with the Constitution. And what I'm getting here is that you're trying to set a new standard that that other DAOs can follow, other foundations can follow, or not foundations rather, but other projects will follow. And that seems like one of the main things that I got from that. Is that true? Am I on the right path here?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that would be a great a great byproduct of NATO-DAO's constitution. Even if they don't want to take up like our constitution as we developed it, they want to come up with their own thing. That's fine. But just kind of showing people that people actually do want this. And I think that the NATO-DAO, just as a DAO itself, it stands as a testament to the fact that there are people in Web3 and there are people in Cosmos who really aren't here for making money as fast as possible, as much as possible right away. These are people who are in the DAO and they voted to explicitly become a nonprofit, so not to receive dividends or revenue share from the DAO. And they are voting. Currently, we've reached quorum. We have like 99.5% approval on the Constitution. They're still showing up to do this, taking time out of their lives to come here and do this. So there are people here who really believe in Web3 as something more than just number go up machine. And I think that, that's what keeps me coming back to the space, because connecting with those people is important and I think powerful, especially whenever you're surrounded by this sea of negativity that the bear markets tend to bring out.
Yeah, and the bear markets tend to, I'll be right with you. What I meant as far as setting a new standard also in the formation, not just the Constitution, but the way you formed it and the thought process and how you were careful about the formation and hopefully setting a template for other projects to follow. And then the Constitution being a different matter. But Poro, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, just given like the realities of like the NETA token, we necessarily have to flip the script. We don't have any like team allocations or like pre-mines or like inflations to incentivize people or like to dump on people. It's a, there's lots of some pain involved, some like but lots of like, I guess research, like we're like a proto DAO. We're researching and paving the way to, alternative models of governance in Web3, and like providing like marketability for governance. I feel like Nate was saying, like we're very organic, we're very lean, very low entropy for like a volunteer organization, or as minimal as we can get away with. And there are opportunities for like Neta token number to go up. It's just it's not just about like acquiring capital. It's more about acquiring contributors. Just thinking like there's lots more research to be done too. Like I want to explore like about the Balaji's book about the network state. I'm just thinking like about like why people value these like these currencies, like what like dollars, like why people work like 40 hours a week for dollars, and it's because sorry, but this relate to the constitution.
I like the what you said, proto DAO. It's a proto DAO. I like that term. Sounds like you guys are coining it. Just for the people that just came in here recently, either Neda, either Neda or Poro, please explain proto DAO one more time and just like a few sentences, because I think that really kind of encapsulates what has been said so far. You know, for example, we have Red Rabbit just came in. I just want to catch him up to date as well. We got some other people as well, and I think they kind of missed the very first part of what you guys were saying. And when you said proto DAO, that pretty much summed up kind of what you were saying in the beginning, what you were laying out in the beginning as far as the thought and due diligence that was done as far as incorporating in a certain place, and the way you issued the tokens and being a nonprofit, and you know, to bring up you also brought up the Cosmos, was it the accelerator or something like that, I forget. And there was, you know, there's a certain amount of like nepotism that I'll use the word nepotism because that's what it feels like. I'm not saying it is nepotism, but it sounds like you guys are just trying to really clean up the process, streamline it, make it minimalist and make it work and make it, you know, watertight, as far as there are no questions later. You're getting all the groundwork done now so that it's very carefully done and not, you know, shoddily done where something will happen in the future where some proposition will just blow the whole thing up. And now you're only on prop number 3. Am I correct on that? Or that's the one that's, it's 99% voted yes so far. Has it passed?
It has 23 hours left. It looks like it will pass. And just to say something about the proto DAO, I tend to speak in semicolons, but I will try to keep this to a few sentences. What you're saying about the general issues with Cosmos, I think, are that there's a sense of insider dealing, like friends of friends get positions, and it's unclear sometimes to the community how and why these things are happening. And it's not necessarily the case that it's bad that they're happening, but when you're public facing, there are certain procedures that you should follow to guarantee legitimacy and integrity to what you're doing. And so as a proto DAO, I think we flatter ourselves maybe, but in any case, we want to be a shining city on a hill, and kind of show that it is possible to have these institutions in place and to encourage transparency and accountability between sub DAOs and the main DAO, and still be able to pursue these sophisticated, complex, and sometimes like very fine-grained types of operations. So that's what I would say is the kind of idea behind the proto DAO, showing that it's possible to create a DAO that's compliant with real world regulations. It's possible to create a DAO that's compliant and sort of trust building within its own community, and that the DAO can grow and change as it as its members grow and change. So those would be my 3 points about the proto-DAO. I don't know if Poro or anyone else wants to add on to it, but yeah.
Yeah, there's something else that comes to mind as well. People are really, really tired as far as these shoddily made projects and foundations and that are on Cosmos right now, and then they're all kind of falling apart. The public trust is down to an all-time low, and this is a very good time for NADA to come out and shine. Just real quick, when did you form this LLC? What year was that?
The vote for it was last year. I think it was last November. And then we submitted the documents, and at the end of February, we received our charter at the end of June. And it's been a few months since then, just because I've been busy. But so this constitutes, it'll be, because of our my very slow process, I think the first time you do something, it always takes longer than the next times. But it's been about 8 months. But again, everybody is a volunteer. I think if we had paid contributors here who were like, this is my 40-hour work thing, we would have probably been a little bit faster. But I'm pretty happy with where things have ended. I think that the extra time just gave us room to think through possible edge cases and to kind of design around those. More than if we did have a cost to someone doing this, we might have had to make more compromises and whatever to get it out the door.
Yeah, as it is, you went really, really, that's quite fast, 8 months. And I may take this conversation backwards sometime, like two steps forward, one step back, just to, get clarity and make it more in simple terms for simple folk like me. For everyone else out there too, go ahead, Poro, if you have anything to add to that, or anyone else on the NADA team, or anyone down at the bottom, unfortunately on the bottom of my screen, raise your hand. I mean, the mic is meant to be given around. But I'll try not to interrupt anymore.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, like, in terms of proto-DAO, like, there are some examples of DAOs. Like, I'm thinking, like, Scapeship DAO, but it's more like a marketing effort for, like, an existing project. Or, like, there's, like, various DAOs, but there's just more, like, multi-sigs. Like, you're saying, like, the AA DAO, and it's a thing, but it's not going to grow, or it's not like a framework for like people to like join like sort of like a collective or a nation or like a functioning governing system.
Is there any? There are other people here from NADA as well, correct? I think Massive is NADA, correct? Which people in this room right now, in this space right now, are involved in NADA DAO? If you want to raise your hands, or if you want NADA to call out your names, that's okay too. But how many people are actively on the team right now? Maybe that's an easier way of asking.
So I will just call out names here. It's myself, I'm Little D, Poro Burrow, Envy, E Pluribus Unum, Massive, and I think that some of the other people here, Cryptovert and Lowo and Mike also maybe are members of NADA DAO. I don't know if they're in terms of our weekly like standing calls or whatever for everyone. It's usually, I would say, anywhere from 4 to 12 people. During the bear market, that number has dropped, of course, because people wander away. But our staking rate is actually higher, I think, right now than it's ever been. I'm just going to check. Yeah, it's at 15.73% staked, which when we passed the incorporation, that number was somewhere in the 14s. People seem to be sort of interested in continuing to commit to the project, which is very heartening, because I know that there are people like Cosmos News who pop in and out, but they have day jobs, they have families and everything, and so they contribute where they can and when they can, but it's not necessarily a steady commitment. But they all contribute to this texture that we have here and allow us to think about things from all of these perspectives, which I think enhances NADAO's position as a validator, and especially as a publicly owned validator for these networks. Because I think one of the, going back to this nepotism or sort of insider stuff that goes on, A lot of validator sets are made up of developers and private companies, these two, and sometimes there's overlap between those. And I think that just by being a public institution that validates these chains, we serve as an important balance or counter to private interest controlling public ledgers. I would really like to see more NATADAOs in the future to do this as well. But that's the idea anyway.
Great stuff. We envy you have your hand up, so please go ahead. And then eventually, I assume we're going to be getting into the constitutional aspects of this. Go ahead, Envy.
Yeah, I just wanted to speak a little bit to what Lil D was saying about just kind of this this sort of revolving door culture. And it's, I think that sort of thing is what initially about a year and a half ago is one aspect of what attracted to me to doing something around building around NATA in the first place. Because I saw that the airdrop had happened by an affiliated party. And I was kind of directed to the Discord by a friend of mine at the time. And I saw everybody just kind of having lots of discussions at the time of, okay, here's this token. It's a blank slate. Anyone anywhere can do anything with it. What do we do? And for the first several months, that was just kind of what was swirling around. There were a whole lot of ideas from a whole lot of people in a whole bunch of different directions. And it was a lot of people just talking about what could be done and what it could mean and what it represents and what it, just everything surrounding it. And I think one of the reasons I was attracted to it was because looking at the NATA token itself, because it's ownerless, because it was distributed evenly across, or rather, as even as could be given parameters, it looked like a place where I could throw my hat in the ring without feeling, I guess, any sort of intense obligation. Like, it was more trying to work on any kind of project from the very beginning was not really anything that I wanted to do. Like, I didn't have any burning desire to do anything in Web3, but I work in tech and I had some particular, I noticed a lot of things in crypto that I really didn't like coming over the last couple of years. And seeing this space and the opportunity that the NATA token presented for anyone to build anything around it with any number of people, I looked at that and thought, okay, that's not a huge obligation. And I thought, hey, this could give a lot of people the opportunity to, if they want to get their feet wet building something, if they want to get their feet wet trying to experiment and learn and I guess really develop some kind of a community with people. And when I say that, I feel that the word community is abused very often. Basically finding a space where people can just learn things and grow together and just kind of act as a group that figures out, okay, what can Web3 really be? Where can we really go with this? And I know I'm kind of swerving all over the road with how I'm speaking right now, but it's just been very fascinating to me the entire time that I've been around since I threw my hat in the ring in the original NATA Money Discord, I think like a year and a half ago or so at this point. But just an open culture of, hey, anyone can come in and do their own thing. And if they don't want to be around anybody who, if they want to go off and form their own group, they can do that. That's totally fine. There's nothing preventing anyone from doing their own thing with NATA. And that's one of the reasons that drew me to it.
Yeah. And sometimes you'll hear validators say things like, well, we only really want to vote on governance proposals that meet these criteria that we're expert in. And I think that the nice thing about NATADAO is that because we're public, Our members, whenever they feel like really compelled by a particular proposal, they can share their ideas with us. And we have a means to like take that up and to make use of it in our deliberations. Whereas other validators maybe don't have that ability because there isn't the community around them to do it. Having that sort of open door thing, it responds to the fact that blockchains are really quite complex systems. An economic or financial system is a complex system, and it has a bunch of externalities. One proposal is for a software development upgrade. The next proposal is a business development relation. And then you have sort of internal rules on how the chain is going to operate, and it goes on and on. And all of these really do require different kinds of, I don't want to say expertise. Sometimes it's expertise, but sometimes it's just about getting as many perspectives as possible and making sure that let's say, minority rights aren't infringed or aren't grossly violated by something. And I think that the public nonprofit structure that NitiDAO has allows us to do that. And so, yeah, for anyone who's invested or involved in these chains that we validate on, if you want to have a more sort of directed or organized voice on those chains, I would invite you to join NitiDAO and to get involved, because I think that's one of our major hopes and goals with the DAO, is to bring this kind of reform to Cosmos that we see as important for Cosmos' continued evolution. We would like to see Cosmos, I think I can speak for everyone, evolve more in this direction than in the direction of private entities, private enterprises, and for-profit companies. Public ledgers sort of need public institutions to keep them honest and trustworthy, and yeah, that's where we see ourselves. And a public thing has to have a sort of revolving door or a right of exit, or else it's it's more of a system of capture, which I think is what people are wanting to escape with the U.S. dollar. Just to return to something that Poro had said earlier about this U.S. dollar and the NATO token. As a store of value, this is how NATO was announced. It was announced as a store of value for the Juno network. And many people kind of laughed. And they were like, you can't just create a store of value whole cloth and just call something a store of value. But I think that NitiDAO, again, is a testament to the fact that there are these values which are not financialized values, but are values of commitment to the ecosystem, interest in thoughtful governance. And the NATO token acts as a kind of badge of honor for these people and allows us to recognize and identify each other. And that is a store of value. Now, whether it's a store of value like gold or a store of value like something else, it kind of beside the point, because the great thing about Web3 technology is that it allows us to tokenize precisely these non-financial values, and it allows for digital communities to get organized around those non-financial values. And I think that, you know, we live in a world where everything is denominated in a USD price. And blockchain actually allows us to hit escape velocity from that world and to explore sort of new social modes of organization and allows digital communities to be like truly sovereign as digital communities and to construct themselves through their own work. And so that's that's still a very powerful and compelling use case of Web3 to me. And I am excited to kind of see that play out. I know that these spaces are only an hour and we haven't really talked about the Constitution, so.
Oh yeah, we're not, I mean, we can go on longer. I mean, you know me, I can go 10 hours. I know you want to get to the Constitution eventually, and that's fine. I keep getting requests. I'm sorry. I keep trying to let Red Rabbit in, and my apologies for that. I'm going to try one more time. It's just failing. If there's any requests that are outstanding, just let me know, DM me, whatever. I'll try my best to get you guys on. But just go ahead, please. And do you want to? Is that a good? Is now a good time to maybe jump into the Constitution and talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think Red Rabbit just joined, so I'll let him speak, and then, yeah.
Yeah, we finally got him up. Finally. Okay.
Don't worry. I'll touch base with you guys later on about some things and just share my private thoughts. But I just wanted to say, I really like where you guys are going. And I think there are some validators outside of Juno and the chains that NADA validates for that are value aligned. And I think my hope is sooner or later that there could be an alliance of these validators coming together.
Yeah, I would love that. I think that if you read the original Adam White paper, it says every chain needs a constitution. But it also talks about this creation of sort of overlapping policy zones and allowing for Web3 communities to rigorize their values into these policies and then create this mesh between them. And I think that that's something that we still need to see. I'll just speak for myself here as Little D, not for everyone on NADAdAO, but I think that there's a strong argument to be made that Bitcoin is a monetary primitive, and that's partially because money has this auto-referential or circular character. Money is what people accept as money. And what Cosmos brings to that, this creation of an economic or monetary institution, is that Cosmos allows us to build social institutions that are still Web3 native around that system. And there may be, I mean, in our daily lives today, everything is the US dollar, but 100 years ago, there were dollars and there was gold and silver. And there's always been this like multilateral monetary system. And I think that there's still room for that. And I think that there's actually appetite for that, because one of the, so NADAdAO, one of our efforts, which I lead, is the NADAdAO Academy. And it's just a seminar series called Coining Reason. And at the moment, we're looking at precisely monetary theory and the development and evolution of the money concept. And there's an argument from some economists and historians that in the 16th century or in the 17th century, the elimination or the merger of means of exchange and units of account, their combination into one thing, namely in the gold standard, created a perverse incentive. So money is supposed to disappear. This is its fundamental thing. It's supposed to be used up and disappear. But whenever you combine the unit of account function and the means of exchange, people have a perverse incentive to hoard money. Money becomes a good in itself. And Web3 technology allows us to unbundle all of this. It allows us to have units of account, means of exchange, stores of value, and to keep them separated and to develop healthier and I think overall socially sort of better systems of social organization or economic organization, however you want to put that. And I realize this is still like very futuristy in a way, because so much of the Web3 space has been captured by DeFi and money go up. But I would say that there's a parallel meaning of DeFi. It's not just decentralized finance. Finance, by the way, is what a lot of original Web3 people wanted to get away from. They didn't want to decentralize it. They wanted to get away from it altogether. And so I think that DeFi should also be heard as definancialization. And this is something that we can still do. And I realize there's not a clear roadmap to it. I think when projects start, they look at the world and they're like, what can we copy that will make a lot of money and put it on blockchain? But there's still room here to completely innovate, to make something totally new, to break with that tradition. And that's what we want to continue kind of like pushing chains to do through our validator and through just our participation in their communities. We want to keep an eye on that sort of original cypherpunk ethos and revolutionary appeal, because it is a powerful one for our world today. Go ahead, Poro.
Just in terms of finding like alignment with other validators, like one role of like a public institution is like to research on like governance proposals and like. For one, we might have a different expertise than like NADAdAO was saying, rather than like technical expertise, more like organizational or political expertise, and we can do like like a think tank, like just publish like research on like cost benefits rather than like what you would see from like a validator that's like looks good to me, rocket ships, and then like things fall apart or they don't, but like and so like people could like cite like. So even like other validators don't have to do their own research. They could just like cite our research or like cite or even like inspire other people to be a think tank. Like we could, and it'd be loosely coupled that way. So it's not like an alliance where like we're bound like financially or, I guess like, by other ways. So people could like opt in or out more fluidly. And like right now we sort of like do that on a micro scale. Like we have our meetings and then we like think things through and then publish a tweet, and that's the scale we're at, but with more resources, we can publish more research.
Yeah, I know that we we participate in the Telescope project, which is a project out of RMIT and University in Melbourne, which is led by Ellie Rennie and some of her graduate students. And she commented to me at one point that she was impressed by how thorough NATADAO was whenever we discuss governance proposals, because she's doing this ethnographic work essentially on the Web3 space and looking at how DAOs are organized and trying to paint this kind of sociological, ethnographic, anthropological picture of web cultures. And she felt like we do like live up to that claim that we care about governance and really spend time deliberating on it. And that was a nice like validation for me that we're onto something and that we're doing something that is sort of unique still. I hope it won't be unique in the future, but we want to keep pushing this so that public ledgers are like publicly controlled, because that's the point, is like we want a monetary system which is local to the communities that are using it and not decided by a central bank, by the Federal Reserve chair, whoever is currently in power. So sorry,
I like that. We hope that it won't be would you say we hope that it won't be the or will be the whatever the future. I was writing that down and that was such a great quote concerning other projects. That you guys will be the template of the future. That's basically what you said.
Yes, yes. I think it's still sort of unique right now what we do, but I hope that it won't be in the future, because this like more deliberative, collective, participatory governance is an integral part of what Web3 and Cosmos specifically is. I think that there may be other blockchains where it's not as much that, but Cosmos is proof of stake. And the vision for it, I think, is these sovereign communities interoperating. And so you sometimes hear it said, like, governance isn't really a use case. There are naysayers about this, to which I would say that governance in Cosmos is pretty underdeveloped and still in need of more care and design. So if we can spur some people just to talk about this more or to think about how this can be done better, I think that will have made NATADAO a success. And that's what I would like to see from here.
Good stuff. Would you like to segue into the Constitution?
Sure.
And talk a little bit about that. I got another request. Signal's up here. Okay, I'm sorry. Good to see your signal. I don't mean to like push you to it, but it's one thing that you wanted to talk about. However, I'm more than willing to entertain the previous conversation longer. So as long as you guys want to take it.
Yeah, Signal, if you wanted to say something and then I'll go up to you.
I had a question for you, if it's all right. I was curious just your experience, like how you manage communicating the message of the DAO, the priorities of the DAO. Like, for example, like you're on Spaces a lot, this kind of thing, right? And I know that I think for you, like there's probably like a decent amount of pressure of you have your personal views versus like the views of all the stakers of the DAO, that kind of thing. And for the most part, like you guys are obviously very diligent and it's mostly aligned, but I'm sure that for you, that's like a constant point of anxiety or a point of concern to make sure that the message that you put out is representative of the constituents, I guess you could say. So I was wondering if you had any comments about like the experience trying to deal with that, or how you're trying to manage it, your strategies, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it is a challenge. I think that one of the things that I try to do, I don't always do it well when I'm in a space though, is to stay focused on things that the DAO itself is participating in. So like if people want to talk about governance proposals, I'm really happy to talk about those and to share the views that we have or that we've discussed about it. And when Cosmos spaces kind of drift more towards this like interpersonal drama, I tend to try to back out of that. Again, I don't know that I always succeed. And on a communications front, one idea that I've had, which I still need to figure out how to implement, is to set up a mailing list for NATADAO. Because if you look, I think it's something like over 80% of people still get their primary source of information about their world from email. So they aren't going out to DAO.zone and reading stuff. And even Twitter and social media are lower than email. And I think that there would be an advantage to having a mailing list like this, because on Twitter, you can get drowned out by weird, whatever, everything else going on Twitter. And having a sort of more direct line of communication to the community about what we're doing is something I would like to set up as we go forward. It would allow us to communicate like directly and sort of in a longer form than a 160 character tweet or whatever the limit is now. To the question, I guess, about how to balance interest and everything, I do, whenever I post on under the DAO's account or tweet here, I do try to run it by everyone first, just to make sure that we know, just to make sure I haven't made some gross error that's going to be embarrassing or something like that.
If I can ask a follow-up, I was wondering if, like, when it comes to governance within the DAO, like NetAdao has a few proposals up. There's three, I think, on the DAO, like, and three or four, maybe. The most recent one, like, it's really good participation on it, but when they are quite intermittent, I wonder how. I'm curious if you wonder at that point if it's like proposals are going up once every 6 months, like how engaged people are. Do you know what I mean? Because you can, when it comes to governance, it's kind of like you have to be prompting people regularly to participate in it. And I was just curious if you've thought about like also strategies or anything for putting up like more regular proposals, for example, just to like gauge how involved people are, for example. I don't know if you know what I'm getting at, but it's like, one of the things, at least for me, like we have a DAO as well, and it's kind of tough to like know how many people are actually paying attention or checked in at any point. And so I guess my question is like, if you had any thoughts about how regularly DAOs should be trying to push governance as a point of, as like a point of participation and like a check-in and like a prompt for community to keep an eye on what's happening.
Yes, that's a great question. It's still, I think, an open question in some sense. But so what I can say is whenever we started working on the Constitution, I looked at studies of DAO participation rates, and it's actually, I mean, it's quite abysmal. DAOs start with really strong participation, and then within a year, they're usually under 10% of people voting. And I think that's a hard reality to kind of design around. And the Constitution itself is meant to balance some of that, because one of the reasons why those DAOs have had abysmal participation rates is because they overload the DAO with too much stuff. Everything has to be voted on by the whole DAO all the time. And people just get fatigued. Like it's too costly. It costs too much time. They don't know how to vote on particular things or whatever. And it causes participation rates to decline. So the Constitution that we're putting forward it kind of moves some of that decision making down towards the levels which are most local to their resolution. And it still provides the DAO at large this oversight and an ability to intervene at any point. So to my mind, it's about balancing those things on the one hand so that we don't create voter fatigue or participation fatigue. And it's also about like being respectful of our stakers' time and their energies as well. And being respectful, but in a way that like they still have transparency, they can look in and they can see and they can say, okay, this sub DAO is doing XYZ, it has these members on it, they're following these policies for it. And if they want to dig into it, then they can, and they can find that. So I would say that I think one of the things DAOs have to do is they have to balance that kind of thing, because it's most convenient to just have a direct democracy where everybody votes on everything all the time. But in practice, those DAOs on Ethereum and other chains have ended up struggling really significantly. Like their participations fall to a point where they can't even reach quorum. And I'm not sure how to read the current vote, because like you say, it has been, there are these gaps of like 4 to 6 months between the proposals. But at the moment we have a higher participation rate on Prop 3 than we did on Prop 2. And it's not too much lower than the participation rate from Prop 1. So I think that to some degree, it testifies to the fact that NATADAO members really are committed to the ideas that we have, and this broader sense of Web3 is a cultural thing rather than just a financial slot machine. Because, yeah, I'm not sure how else to really interpret that participation rate other than that there is a core group of people who do genuinely care about the governance and want to contribute to it. So, maybe that's a good way to segue to the Constitution, unless you have another follow-up question, Signal.
No, please go ahead. That's a great answer. And yeah, I was just curious your thoughts on it. So please go ahead with the Constitution.
So I will try to just give kind of a high-level overview of the Constitution, because you can go read it as the PDF. But essentially, the way it's written, my hope, is that it kind of builds from each article to the next. So at the beginning, we define what a member is. A member is someone who is staked into the DAO. And there are certain rights that you have as a DAO member. You can vote on proposals. You can put proposals up. You can join sub-DAOs, and so on. All of that has to have some kind of responsibility, however, attached to it. And that responsibility is defined here. It's quite vague at the moment, but it's simply that you have to be participating on some kind of basis, an occasional basis or whatever, a basis that isn't going to impair DAO operations. And so when that responsibility isn't met, we have it written in that it is possible to revoke membership interest in the DAO. So people, of course, still hold their native tokens, but they just won't be staked. And if they want to rejoin, they would just have to restake. It's not a permanent ban or anything. And this was actually encouraged by the Marshall Islands. They, just to be explicit about it, the Marshall Islands DAO guy told me, he was like, it may be the case in the future that Interpol issues a warrant or something, and they've identified an address in your DAO. And he was like, your DAO, for compliance purposes, needs to have a means to revoke membership in it, or else you can be, you know, afoul of these these authorities. That was a strong argument for why we needed a means to revoke membership. The concern about DAO participation dropping or dwindling too much for the DAO to function is another. We obviously aren't anywhere near that. But then also as a nonprofit LLC, we aren't supposed to have beneficial owners. There are no owners of the DAO. It's a public institution. And in the Marshall Islands, they've defined that ownerless structure as being one basically without anyone having more than 25% of the governance power. So there's a hard cap on the amount of tokens you can stake into the DAO. If you're over that 25%, you will get unstaked back down to the appropriate limits. And the Marshall Islands also, again, this is just part of their sort of monitoring obligations. If you have more than 10% staked, they want you to KYC, not with the DAO, so we don't know who you are per se. But anyone who has more than 10% staked in the DAO is supposed to KYC with the Marshall Islands, and we have to check that once a year. I think that our hope is to develop a system. Whiskey is our developer, but he's taken a job at a new thing, which is very exciting for him. So I'm not sure exactly when we'll have this put in place, but I know he's willing to do it as soon as we give him the go-ahead. But we'd like to have a system where as soon as you reach these thresholds of 10 and 25%, either you're automatically unstaked if you're in violation, or you get some kind of notice that we need to talk to you to figure out how to get you KYC'd or whatever. So we really don't want to revoke people's membership. That's not the goal, but we do have to have those protections in place to protect our LLC charter. From there, so once you become a member of the DAO, you stake into the DAO. There are several types of roles that you can take in the DAO, and these include a representative, contributors, leads, multi-sig members, and sort of any other role that the DAO eventually creates. And so to talk about those, to give those some context, this constitution puts forward a governance structure, and that structure is the Congress. What we've called Congress, and it's essentially a bicameral governing body. So we have sub DAOs, which are dedicated to the daily operations of the DAO. So like maintaining the website or running the validators, whatever it is. These have sub DAOs wrapped around them, and they are represented on the Congress. And then on the other side of that, we have just general stakers or the community. And these people can become representatives to Congress. So it's like a Senate of sub-DAOs and a House of Representatives or a House of the community members who come together and provide sort of oversight and budget allocations to the sub-DAO and to the DAO's operations, whatever they may be. And so this is the main structure that we have. We also have two multi-sigs, which one of them is the Executor multisig. This is an artifact of the fact that DAO doesn't have a no with veto option, or maybe I should say that the version of DAO we're on, because I know we're one behind, I believe, doesn't have a no with veto option. So the Executor multisig is tasked with vetoing spam and malicious proposals. We've seen spam proposals on all of the chains. It's like, oh, click here for your airdrop, blah, blah, blah. A malicious proposal might be of the sort that it wants to drain the DAO's treasury, or it wants to dissolve all of the sub-DAOs or something like that. So the Executor multisig is tasked with that. The other multisig is a treasury multisig. And this multisig is essentially a gatekeeper to the treasury. It prevents spending proposals sort of immediately processing and allows for the DAO to review them in case that there are any regulatory or legal concerns that we need to address first. This was a little bit before my time of joining NADADAO, but these structures were created when the original group of members were sort of wargaming all of the paths by which DAOs can be compromised or taken over. And so these two structures are like safety features. So the Congress, it has these two houses, the Senate and it has these two bodies, the Senate and the House of Representatives. And the Congress has a scope, as I mentioned, of setting funding allocations to our sub-DAOs. It provides a forum for collaboration and mutual oversight of our sub-DAOs. And it also is sort of where we will host our public meetings going forward. So the congressional meetings will be public. Anyone can join them, even if you aren't a participant in the Congress. And this will this will allow people to provide sort of the broadest level of oversight to Knighted Owl's operations possible. The community at all times reserves a right to recall and remove people from any of these positions. So if someone is not pulling their weight or is doing something weird, you can be removed either by the organization that you're sitting on. So like if you're on a sub-DAO, the sub-DAO can remove you, but the community can also remove you if they need to. There are some details and parameters around congressional voting. It has a 70% quorum, requires an absolute majority, but a lot of this I'll leave for anyone to read, just because otherwise we get a little bit into the weeds. So to focus just on the Senate and the sub-DAOs, we understand the Knighted Owl as a federation of sub-DAOs. We have these multiple sub-DAOs all performing daily operations for the DAO. And we want them to be organized. We want them to communicate to each other and with each other. And this is, so this is the sub-DAO structure is how we want to do that. Each sub-DAO can have a lead to the Congress, can and must have a lead to the Congress. So it varies based on the number of people in the sub-DAO. So the rule essentially is that for every 4 contributors on a sub-DAO, you get one more lead to the Congress. And so this allows for, as the sub-DAO's activities become more intense or it like takes up more and more of the DAO's resources, their interests are represented properly at the Congress. And there are checks and balances on how the sub-DAOs grow beyond those initial 4 contributors, or once you start adding every 5th contributor, we have a check and balance system to make sure that, you know, someone isn't just front loading a sub-DAO to take control. So this ensures that each new contributor is genuinely participating and actually contributing towards something that the DAO wants to be done. Each sub-DAO also has this ability to create sub-sub-DAOs. We've talked about it a little bit in terms of like administration. There may be a need for sub-DAOs to have like secretarial or administrative type sub-sub-DAOs. But these are also bound to by the rules of congressional representation and the overall formation of new sub-DAOs that we've identified. So a new sub-DAO can only be created by a full DAO vote. The Congress is not able to just create spin-up sub-DAOs willy-nilly and to pursue whatever the Congress thinks is worthwhile. Congress needs to put forward, or whoever is interested in creating the sub-DAO needs to put forward a proposal to the community. Because I think that's where, to sort of answer the question that Signal was raising earlier in terms of like, how do you divide what the entire DAO needs to vote on versus what you can delegate down to sub-DAOs. This is part of that. So it's important that the DAO itself create new sub-DAOs so that the DAO is like consenting to these new operational scopes or these new areas of work. And that's one of the major things that I think the DAO as a whole will continue voting on. It may not be like votes every week or votes every month, but it's about giving our stakers the authority where like their authority really matters. Whether the entire DAO needs to vote to pay Poro for running the validator 1 month to the next, I think that's better handled at the local sub-DAO level. So that's how we have structured it. Each sub-DAO, whenever it is formed, the creation of a new sub-DAO has to have at least one member, obviously. But it also needs a sub-DAO operating policy, which tells us and tells the community, this is how we're going to establish consensus. This is how we're going to hire people. These are the conditions under which we might fire or dissociate someone. and so on. Anything else that's sort of relevant to that sub-DAO's operations. We want that to be codified. We want that to be visible and publicly accessible. Sub-DAOs that stop doing work, that go dormant or that become inactive for certain periods, whether that's a full quarter or just a what I would call a distressing period of inactivity. So it might be the case that like we're working on a website revamp, and then let's say Envy, who's on our backend sub-DAO, goes missing for 3 weeks or something, and we aren't able to push that. That would be an impairment to the DAO's operations. It would be distressing to operations, and so the Congress has a right to suspend sub-DAOs that do that. I don't think we're going to have that problem anytime soon. But again, it's about having the authority to make these changes when and where we need to. So in addition, so that's sort of the Senate and the sub-DAOs. The House of Representatives is also based on a 1-to-4 ratio. So community members can be elected to the Congress, and there's a ratio which is one representative seat to every 4 leads on the Congress. So initially, there probably won't be a huge number of people at the Congress. We hope that as the DAO sort of grows and expands, and now that we have this clarity both externally and internally about our operations, it'll make more sense for people to like pick up a shovel and get involved. So that's the House of Representatives. We don't exactly know yet how to appoint them, I would say. And that's because we need to see the interest that there is in participating. Maybe there's no interest. We will, in any case, hold the seat open. So if and when someone steps up and wants to participate in it, then they can. If there's a ton of interest and there are more people wanting to join than there are seats, then the DAO will organize elections or organize some kind of selection mechanism to make that happen. Again, with the intention of it being transparent, accountable, and open to as many people who want to participate as possible. So I'll just start wrapping up on that. The multi-sigs, the crucial feature, I think, of the multi-sigs, I already said like what they do. The executor multi-sig strikes down spam and malicious proposals. The treasury multi-sig acts as a kind of gatekeeper to the DAO's treasury. But the multi-sigs are made up of 9 members, and it requires a vote of 6 to pass anything. So there's always a majority rule requirement, a kind of actually a slightly more than a majority. The crucial feature, I think, of the multi-sigs is that because these have this long-term kind of outlook on the DAO, the seats on the multi-sig are staggered into 3 classes, which expire every 3 years. That's a little bit abstract, maybe, but if you think about the seats in the Senate, in the U.S. Senate, they're also staggered into 3 classes, and they come up every 6 years. Each year, essentially, 3 members from a multi-sig, from each multi-sig, will be up for renewal or for a new election if they want to step out or if the community, if somebody wants to run. But this sort of long-term 3-year, 36-month obligation is meant to provide some stability and longevity to the DAO's operations. Because it may be the case that like a whole bunch of people rotate in and then rotate out, and there needs to be some continuity between these things. So the hope is that the multi-sigs can provide some of this in the sort of last instance or final the final instance, they provide that continuity to DAO operations. Again, multi-sig members can be recalled if they're not doing a good job. Also, if multi-sig members step down, we'll organize elections or whatever for them, just as we do for everything else. The remainder of the constitution is a little bit more procedural. So one of the articles, it's Article 7, is on the commons. The DAO has to maintain some kind of forum for DAO members to sort of interact with each other. And at the moment, I think that's the Discord server. But in the future, it you know, if Discord gets shut down or like whatever, the community members want to leave Discord, it'll be whatever gets established in that process. We also will indemnify members as required under the Republic of Marshall Island law. And the DAO will establish a defense fund, which will allow for the payment of this indemnification as long as and under such conditions as which it doesn't jeopardize the DAO's ability to meet its other obligations. So I didn't want there to be a bunch of claims on indemnification that just drain the DAO treasury again. So yeah, as long as it doesn't impair the DAO's operations, then we will make those payments because we believe in limited liability protections and we are aiming to not get anyone in these positions. Like we take that very seriously. The remaining three articles, Article 9 is on the treasury. It simply indicates the rules by which the treasury can be spent. There has to be an operating reserve maintained so that we can always put proposals up for a vote. At the moment, that's like 15 data, so it's not a huge operating reserve, but it's important for the DAO to have that. There's also rules about if we stake tokens from the treasury. So if we have a bunch of Juno and we stake them, we thought about, you know, how could we stake it to different validators? But in the end, there's no good way to do that without conflicts of interest and other things. So our rule is that if we're staking tokens on chains we validate, we will stake them to our validator. And that is the sort of cleanest way to do that. If we end up staking tokens on chains that we don't validate, we'll likely need a community vote, but we'll have to see kind of how, if and when we get to that position. We'll work it out collectively. There's also a rule on neutrality. So NADADAO can never stake NADA into its own contract. That would grossly imbalance the DAO. And it creates a recursivity problem, which is that those tokens now need to vote on every proposal, but it's precisely the task and the right and responsibility of the DAO members to vote on it. So we wanted to avoid any of that. So we've ruled out any situation in which a sub DAO or the DAO at large stakes its own NADA tokens into the NADA DAO. That is a neutrality risk and a credibility risk. For any conflicts that arise, the constitution and our operating agreement preempt anything that may happen in the smart contract. So when you read this constitution, there are sometimes rules about, you know, we need a 70% quorum and whatever, an 80% passing threshold. And what this provision about conflicts does is it says that where DAO would allow you under our current configuration to pass something with much different amounts, those even when they're considered passed, they won't be valid proposals. So this is just kind of a bridge between the work that we need done on the smart contract side and the constitution as it's written here. It may be the case that those conflicts become pronounced or quite chronic, and the DAO can designate a particular sub-DAO. We would likely need to create one for this. To have the authority to interpret the constitution and to apply that interpretation to particular circumstances. We didn't establish that at the beginning because it's hard to imagine how that'll happen right away, but it's something that the DAO and the Congress can do together going forward. And lastly, there's an amendment procedure. So amendments can be made to the Constitution. If you do it without congressional approval, you need a very high quorum of 60% and an 80% approval by members. And if you do it, if Congress has already voted to approve these amendments, then it drops to a 25% quorum and an 80% approval by members. Still fairly stiff, This way, amendments are either they have broad consensus among the community, or the people who are operating in the day-to-day realities of the DAO. They've already sort of agreed to it, see the point and the value that it will bring. Two ways to amend. One without congressional approval and one with. In the very final article on dissolution, it just says that our DAO LLC, the legal wrapper that we have around the DAO, it can be dissolved either through our inability or failure to pay our maintenance fee to the Republic of Marshall Islands, which is sort of, it goes without saying that would be the case. But we could also form and migrate to a new legal entity, but it will require both congressional and DAO approval to do that. I tried to keep it as high level as I could. I know I got a little bit detail oriented there, but thanks for listening. Any thoughts or questions? And I should say that Gus helped us a lot with the writing of this constitution. He provided a lot of revision and sort of editorial insight into how to standardize the language and tighten it. And I, as the person who that mostly fell on, I really appreciated Gus's input there. I'm not saying Gus co-signs the constitution. I don't know about all of that, but he was a great resource. And I think that this is kind of what Cosmos and NADADAO is all about. Like it creates new communities who share values and who can tap into that human capital that we have. And that's kind of how I don't know if you're a NADADAO member even, but you are a cosmonaut in some broad general sense, even if you don't want to be. To me that was sort of a great moment in our growth and our evolution. So thanks for hosting this space and thanks for helping us with the drafting.
I'm speechless. Thank you so much. I appreciate the shout out, and I loved working on it. And I just want to say, and I've said it a million times, I like working with Little D. I like the way he writes, and we write very similar. There weren't a lot of things that were different. I mean, the things that I added, you accepted, and we went back and forth. And you're probably the easiest person I've ever worked with, as far as on anything that I've worked in any crypto project before. So it was an absolute pleasure, and I hope to work with you again. So I'm glad to be a part of it. Thanks a lot. Thanks for mentioning me.
Just my comments about, I like the, what's this section? Like Article 10 about like, even just interpretations. This is obviously, I perceive it as like a prototype still, like we're saying, like there are like provisions for amendments, and we need to see this working in action, and it's not going to be perfect. The first time the U.S. Constitution wasn't perfect, so they made amendments and such. And then they didn't make it initially. I'm just thinking like the Juno Charter, there was a process. But like, I'm thinking like my initial thought was like, this kind of makes it flimsy or open to interpretation, but I don't think that's the case. And then there, like you're saying, there's layers to it. It's like, I'm thinking like a programming language or like some formal specification, like where it could all compile nicely. And it's like, it's all systematically proven, and it's hard to do this, I suppose, with more legal documents. But like you're saying, there's layers to like the enforcement of it. Like there's like the Marshall, there's like the DAO, and then there's the smart contracts, and it explains well of like what takes precedent, and like it's like if there's a, you always think like when there's code, there's law, like people just get away with it. Maybe not in this case, if we can, if it's worthwhile to pursue bad actors, and it could even like provide as a deterrent, so no one like, what's the word? Play and find out, sort of deal.
Yeah, I think that's one of the benefits of creating a legal wrapper around NataDAO is that if any of our members do go rogue or try to do something that's undesirable, the legal wrapper allows the DAO to actually pursue them. And in a lot of these cases in Cosmos and elsewhere, if something goes wrong, the community just kind of has to shrug because there's no organized way to pursue it. So even the LLC wrapper, it provides a check and balance on our multi-sig members and on everyone in any of those other structures, to do their job and to do it in the way that we want them to do it. These layers of checks and balances at every step were really important to me, because I think that you can't really create something that people will feel a whole lot of like trust in if you skip on that or if you just kind of hand wave it. So it was important to get that like detailed and ironed out here in the constitution.
Well, what do you say, Neda and Puro? We just go around the room, and if anyone has any questions, I think Red Rabbit had some things he wanted to say earlier in the conversation. Do you want to go back to maybe that, or is there anyone else that wants to? The mic is open. I think NataDAO is an awesome project, and the more I learned about it, and I even learned more tonight in the first 30 minutes about the whole process of the incorporation in the Marshall Islands. I'm sorry, the LLC in the Marshall Islands, and how it was formed and everything. I learned a lot through that as well. So, I mean, I'm sold on it. I mean, I think it's a really, really good. What was the name? Proto DAO. I like that. It very much is. It very much embodies that sort of spirit. So, yes, thanks. Anyone here have any questions? I think this is a great time to ask. What do you guys think?
Yeah, for sure.
I had a question. Is there any downside to like incorporating in the Marshall Islands?
It probably depends on your project. I mean, this is always the legal answer you're going to get. It depends on your circumstances. For us, I don't think that there were... The downside was we had to pay to do it, but you have to pay no matter what you do. Otherwise, it didn't centralize the project. There's no... Precisely as a nonprofit, there's no owner of NataDAO, so there's no one who is indirectly liable for the DAO's operations. And this is... So it didn't centralize the DAO. It did provide us clarity on our tax obligations where we need those. It provides limited liability protection to our members. So that all for me was very positive. I'm not sure. I mean, maybe as we go forward, we'll find out that there are downsides to it. But I'm in the MyDAO, the Marshall Islands DAO Discord and Telegram groups. And from what I've seen, a lot of projects who have gone this route, they don't have a lot of drawbacks. I think the big questions they usually have is like, or like, how do we open a bank account, and where do we open a bank account, and that kind of stuff. But I don't think that there are any drawbacks to that. There are Marshall Islands companies with bank accounts all over the world, and so yeah, it's just a matter of crossing that bridge when we get to it, I think, because you eat the elephant one bite at a time.
Yeah, and I may get into a rabbit hole here, but LLCs are kind of misleading. They're not really corporations. There are some differences between the two of them, and I have to say that is not my area of expertise. But there is a slight difference between the two. But for all intents and purposes, the protections that you have with a corporation and with an LLC are quite similar. So I have to look it up. But
I think the C corporations, which are what most people think of when you say corporation, they fall under a double taxation regime where where their revenue is taxed and then they're taxed again at distribution, or it's a double taxation regime. In the LLCs and S corporations, as they're called in the United States, these are the revenue sort of flows through before it hits that tax obligation. And the thing about the nonprofit at the Marshall Islands is that it takes us out of that double taxation regime, which defines C corporations and like Microsoft, Apple, these really big companies, and puts us into that like single point of taxation. So it greatly economizes the need that we have for accounting overhead and all of this sort of bookkeeping that would come with the more rigorous C corp.
Were there any considerations as far as piercing the corporate veil when you chose the Marshall Islands? Meaning a situation in which courts put aside the limited liability. I'm actually reading it. And hold a corporation's shareholders or directors personally liable for the corporation's actions or debts. Veil piercing is most common in close corporations. I know that I think it's Nevada is one state that where you cannot pierce the corporate veil. But I just wonder if that came into consideration. Maybe I'm going down a rabbit hole here, but as far as doxing the people inside NADADAO, there is something in the Constitution. Maybe you might want to talk about that as far as participants and their identities, that kind of thing.
Yes.
KYC type. I'll leave it to you.
Yes. So if you want to discuss that. In terms of piercing the corporate veil, so I'm not an attorney, but my understanding is that would happen in cases where the DAO has committed criminal activities, and there was someone in the DAO or working on behalf of the DAO who was like directly liable for that. I think that otherwise it's very hard for them to pierce the corporate veil. And the other thing is that as a nonprofit, we don't have beneficial owners, so nobody can control more than 25% of the DAO. Otherwise, like that's the definition of having a beneficial owner for the Marshall Islands, I should say. but I think that that's also true in the U.S. On nonprofits. I remember I looked through all of this, and I'm pretty sure that was congruent with U.S. laws on nonprofits as well. One of the ways that we have to protect the corporate veil is to enforce these limits on who can stake and who can control the DAO. And of course, if those limits are broken, the people who are breaking them are most likely to be caught out by it. So there's an incentive for other people not to do that as well. It's not just something we have to do. It's something that our members should also not want to be putting themselves in the position of, I hope. As for doxing our members, we do not dox our members. We did have as part of the Marshall Islands compliance with anti-money laundering laws, every DAO that incorporates there does have to be one person who submits KYC information to them. This person is not liable for the DAO. They don't own the DAO. It's simply so that authorities have someone they can contact and say, like, hey, if, you know, precisely in that case of like there's a warrant from Interpol for such and such. The Marshall Islands has to know who to contact to deal with that. And so that's what the KYC requirement is there for. So whenever you KYC, you don't KYC to the other NADADAO members. We still don't, you know, you can dox yourself as much or as little as you want to within the DAO. Any doxing that you do goes to the Marshall Islands, and they keep that in their government offices, which are not posted online. The doxing is purely kind of procedural for them to meet these requirements that they have internationally. NADADAO itself, at least in its current form, does not require anyone to dox to the DAO.
You're talking about as far as limited liability companies, they're required to have registered agents. Most states are like that. The state I'm in, and I think anywhere you have an LLC, you at least have to have one person that is an agent. So that person would be the person that's doxed according to the LLC registration.
Yes, for us, the registered agent is the MyDAO LLC. The MyDAO Directory Services is their full name. They're an organization that works with the Republic of Marshall Islands to incorporate DAOs as LLCs. That's the only way to do so in the Republic of Marshall Islands. So they serve as our registered agent, and then we had to have one person KYC with the Marshall Islands just for AML compliance, basically. But yeah, again, that person doesn't assume any extraordinary liability or extra liability on behalf of the DAO for doing so. It just gives a sort of show of good faith to regulators that we want to comply. We aren't trying to do any funny business. And yeah, if you need to contact us, there is a way to do so.
Well said. Well put. Anyone else have any questions? Sorry, I kind of went down the rabbit hole with that one. Red, did you want to mention anything? Is there something you had in the beginning that you want to circle back to? Or anyone else who's a member or part of Native DAO is working on the team as well, who has not spoken up yet? Please go ahead. Okay, Red, go ahead.
I don't know if you guys considered this for the Constitution, instead of going for always the amendments, but something unique in the Hawaii State Constitution is that every 10 years, no matter whether the legislature puts it up or not, there's a question on the ballot, the statewide ballot, of whether or not to hold a CONCON, Constitutional Convention, to basically rewrite the Constitution instead of having to amendments and everything like that. And that came out of, what is it, 1976 Hawaii State Constitutional Convention, where they completely rewrote the state constitution so that there's a mechanism in place so that for reform. And Hawaii is one of the only Western state in the United States that doesn't have a citizen ballot initiative process. It's everything is through the legislature. And Hawaii has one of the most centralized state governments in the US. There's only one statewide elected official, and that's the governor. So, but in terms of reforms and going with the times, that was something I thought I'd throw out there you guys might want to consider in terms of a future amendment of so that you don't have to keep on amending, and then it just becomes sort of this document that becomes unruly.
Yeah, there's a CONCONs happen in with 2/3 of the states calling for a constitutional convention, and Congress is then required to call the convention. So I don't know if that's happened before. I'm not quite sure, but yeah, CONCON. I haven't heard that word in a long time, that term. That's a very good idea. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Nate, I cut you off.
Oh, I was just going to say I love that idea. I think that especially in Web3, where like everything changes so fast in 6 months or a year, but having some kind of provision like that would be really great. I didn't include it in the Constitution. I now kind of wish I had, but we can definitely throw that in and think about how to keep faith in the Constitution as a document that everybody is agreeing to, and like you say, it could become this like weird vestigial thing that's overgrown with amendments later on, and then it's very hard to figure out like what is the intention or like what's the purpose of this. Having periodic votes on it just to make sure people like re-ratify or want to change would be a great idea. So I've actually made a note to myself for that. So thanks, Red Rabbit. That's a great point.
I have another question, and it was something I was thinking of before the space actually happened, was how many, I mean, stupid here as usual, but how many other projects have constitutions within the cosmos? And will the constitution that's being used in NADA, the NADA DAO constitution, be used in any other project in the future or as a template?
I'm not sure how many projects in Cosmos have constitutions. I don't think very many, if at all. As for whether our constitution will be a template, I did share it with the Juno working group when we were working on the Juno charter and the Juno constitution. And I think that we had sort of an independent convergence on some of these points, just sort of structures for oversight, checks and balances and everything. And so, I'm excited to kind of push that and to think about it. Obviously, NATADAO's constitution is quite restricted by comparison. NATADAO doesn't have validators. We don't have these other externalities that a full chain has. So using NATADAO's constitution maybe as a seed to build on or to grow from for Juno or other networks would be possible. I'm excited for the Juno constitution process. We're putting up a charter soon. It'll dissolve Core One, and most of the existing subDAOs will either be restructured or dissolved in their turn. And this will give us some time to kind of evaluate how Juno operates under this new organizational scheme, and to like solidify constitutional principles going forward from that. So I hope that it'll be used. I can't force anyone to use our constitution in that way, but the ideas behind the constitution that we have of just like very rigorous checks and balances at every level, I think would be great to see throughout Cosmos.
Well, before we wrap it up, any last questions or anything else that Neda or Poro want to add? Or anyone else has asked questions before, or any new questions out there before we wrap it up? I know we were meant to go an hour. It's turning into 2 hours, which is quite all right, because it's worth 2 hours. The subject is definitely worth 2 hours. And I hope a lot of people listen to this. Hopefully Terra Spaces is recording it somehow, somewhere. I don't know how they do it, but I asked them to. So before we go, anyone else want to mention anything?
Just a comment. I think with this, with Neta just being created out of nowhere and dropped to people, and like various folks interacting at different points, you have to really celebrate this kind of like success. And then like people that have made contributions at various points in it. It's been really, really a fascinating experiment to watch. And so it's, I don't know, it's the kind of stuff that's like, it should be fun. You know, it's like, I don't know, I think it's fun stuff to see people building things like this. And so my only comment would be, I got a lot of respect for everyone that's put time into it.
Thanks. That's a great closing remark, and I'm sure the NATA team really appreciates that. And well, what we'll do is we'll wrap it up, guys. It's almost at the hour, 10 minutes to the hour, and we'll hopefully there'll be another NATA DAO or NATA something somewhere in the future. I hope I can host or at least listen to. I found out my wife, she got the drop. I didn't. I asked her at dinner tonight. I'm like, can I have that? It's mine. I have to get by my NADA and get more involved. And I hopefully everyone else here will as well, if you're not already. So, thanks a lot, guys. And, we'll catch you later in some other crazy spaces. This is kind of a more serious one, and that's what Nightfall is all about. Being a bit more serious about topics and recording it. So you guys have a great day, a great night, and the rest of the weekend.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Thanks, Gus.
Oh, thank you, sir. And thanks, Poro. Everyone else, thank you.
Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ants dragging out the maximum amount of payments. Red down days, got them acting all bankless. Yo fam, what? these tokenomics. They probing this bear, flexing broken honest. I had to lay my soul down, I'm just roasting honest. And then to end a long day, 11 bowls of chronic. Never known the politic, I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom. Over impossible loss, it's all moss, and I'm liking the odds. Fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Flick the cap, though the road is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary falls. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy, before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure out the max amount of dinner lace, stacked in non-toxic, just to get a better place. Smacking on the hostage, like the shit is play for keeps. Clowns, white knight, and all these Maybellines. They call it implausible, when model after model keeps on ripping off the coat and going full throttle. Beats, tearing apart your community. All these low-hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. Got a planet in reach, coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10, stargazing after the siege. Commanding all the management to grab a few seats, and then we'll round up the beasts and send a messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats, and if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy, before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the verbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served.
Spaces.